So what I want to talk about is using this data as input to a very, very simple boundary layer model that we have, a point-wise vertical boundary layer model that attempts to account for some of the nonlinear dynamics in typhoon-type boundary layers. And I think one thing that Chris and Jochen didn't quite mention yet is that a very important part of the processing came from Roland and Chris developing ways to remove scalloping artifacts from the SAR imagery and removing beam seam artifacts. And that's very crucial to getting any of this to work. So the science question that I had is, how can we best use surface level pressure, sea level pressure data, to improve SAR wind retrievals in tropical cyclones? And the motivation for that is, as Pete showed very clearly yesterday, the SAN boundary layer winds are very difficult to interpret. But pressure data is inherently smoother. And it's a point measure, it's the pressure. You don't have to worry quite so much. You can't have enormous lateral pressure gradients. Well, the pressure gradients are going to tend to be a smoother picture. And bulk pressure differences between measurements of drop zones or drifter data or any sort of float data are dynamically relevant for constraining the wind retrievals. So what Chris and Jochen have been talking about is pixel by pixel wind retrieval, where you estimate a wind direction and you have an estimate of the backscatter. There's uncertainty in the backscatter too. And you derive a wind from a geophysical model function. But there's ambiguity problems in the GMFs, there's a saturation problem at low incidence angles, there's wind direction uncertainty, which has to do with Pete's comment earlier, that organization, the orientation of the organized large eddies, the linear features versus the wind direction, the choice of the spatial scale, because you can form these linear features at a variety of scales simultaneously interacting, and there's a high sensitivity at low incidence angles, and there's this backscatter uncertainty. So with this pressure retrieval methodology that we use, and we've been using it for a long, long time on the scatterometer winds, is we take a pixel by pixel wind retrieval as an initial guess, run it through a boundary layer model, estimate pressure gradients, and then fit a pressure field to that. And so this sea level pressure is inherently integrating a scene-wide information into one picture, and it can fill small to moderate-sized gaps. We apply Jochen's filters, except for the final wind speed uncertainty filter, where we apply the landmass filter, we apply the GMF uncertainty filter, and we apply the non-wind feature filter to the winds before we use them. And we get also a dynamic constraint on the wind directions. And what we find is that overall, we tend to increase the inner core inflow. So this is a picture of how it works. We have the satellite looking at the ocean surface, and it measures a backscatter. And we relate that to, and we have a near surface wind that we suppose is related to the generation of the surface roughness. And then from the SAR image, this is a blow up of a corner, you can identify these linear features sitting on the SAR image. And you get an estimate of the wind direction, you apply the geophysical model function, you get some sort of a 10 meter wind. I use this very simple boundary layer model that relates this near surface wind to an interior flow wind above the boundary layer. And we can decompose that to get at the geostrophic component. And of course, you know, typhoons are very far from geostrophic, but there is always a geostrophic component. We can identify that. And we know that that's non-divergent, which is our constraint on directions. And then we estimate a swath of pressure gradients from the swath of input surface winds. And we can tolerate small patches of very bad pressure gradients or mislocated, missing due to the filtering, missing for a variety of reasons. From this pressure gradient field, we use least squares to fit a surface pressure pattern. And then, but it'll have the correct pressure or best guess estimate of the pressure gradients. And once we have the pressure gradient field, then we can rederive a new surface wind field. So that's the sea level pressure filtering that we're applying. And what I've been experimenting a lot with lately is to iterate this whole process. So I can run these new wind directions, throw away the wind speed, and run the wind directions back through the model. So this is the ambiguity problem that Chris and Jochen have both talked about. So this is just a typical slice through CMOD 5. And for a relatively low incident angle, so this is where we get the saturation problem. So you can see this little laser pointer up here, there we go. If we have, you know, a typical crosswind direction of about 30 degrees, we can get these two solutions here, so that's the ambiguity problem. But if we get a small wind direction difference of 10 degrees, then we can get a wind speed problem. So we're very sensitive in these conditions to small errors in wind direction. And then if we go the other direction in wind, we might not even get a solution if this is our measured backscatter. We also have this, you know, uncertainty in backscatter, so maybe we're dropping up to this curve here. So this is part of the problem of the pixel by pixel retrieval. This is the set of eyes that Mike talked about earlier. And what I plot here in the side is just these are the C-130 flights in green that were relatively near in time to the SAR overpass. We have this data to look at. So I'm looking in particular at two images for what I'm going to present here. So the first one is our dream case here. It's Malakas on the 22nd. And the C-130 arrived on the scene within 15 minutes of the overpass. And there's only up to about a 4.5 hour time difference overall. There were 28 drop zones. We did storm relative corrections. And we're looking at the SFMR when it's present. And then 2 days later, we had another one on the 24th, in which the C-130 was either 8 hours before or 8 hours after, and it was a near miss on the eye. So this, I wanted to show a consistency between ASCAT and RADARSAT-2, because ASCAT is the existing scatterometer. So this was the closest in time scatterometer overpass to the time of the SAR. So I've done a storm relative shift of its locations. And then here's the RADARSAT-2 image fitting right in between the two ASCAT beams. And I think there's good consistency in the wind fields. But these are 1 kilometer winds, and then these are 12.5 kilometer process winds. But there's a good consistency of the picture, especially if you go up to larger scales. One thing I've been looking at is once I do this filtering winds, I can calculate, because I have a relatively smooth surface wind field, I can start looking at gradient properties. And I've been looking a lot at this surface wind divergence. So we have these red colors tend to be convergent winds, assumed to be convergent winds, and then the blue colors tend to be the divergent winds. And you can see we get very often these alternating blue-red patterns. Now, the interpretation I'd like to believe is that is alternating the inflow into the bottom of small rain bands, and then the divergent is the flow in between the two rain bands, or perhaps a downflow. It could be rain contamination. Another issue is that it could be, say, the radar interacting with the ice and the melting level or something like that as it goes down towards the surface. But if you look at this with a little bit of imagination, we have here this kind of backscatter type image of the sea surface. And if you superimpose the divergent convergent features on there, you can actually pick out in the backscatter bright and dark regions that are corresponding to that. And then I had a MODIS visible image, or MODIS infrared image, about 8 hours off. And if you shift that back to the same location of the SAR image, you can start to pick out that there are these features in the clouds that are corresponding roughly to the scale and approximate location that we see in the SAR convergence divergence. So this is something that I'm looking at now. So this is the shift of the C-130 flight to the storm relative, normalized to the SAR overpass time. And then this is the sea level pressure that I derived, and then I did the same trick that Chris did, in which I color-coded the drops on location pressures and superposed them in the same color scale, so when they fade in the background, it's pretty good fit. And then the other thing I want to point out is we can look at pressure differences between points. So if we have 28 sons, we can make 378 pressure difference measurements. And now if I take the directions that I derive from this pressure pattern, feed it through CMOD 5, gap fill where the CMOD 5 blows up with my SLP filtered winds, I get this wind field here. So this is sort of a hybrid in between the direct winds. It's really a direction correction with gap fill with the pressure winds. And then these are the surface wind normalized to 10 meters from the drop zones at the splash location of the sun. And if we look at comparing the pressure observations, once we've shifted the pressure pattern to the sons, with the derived pressure from the sea level pressure, we get something like the 3 millibar RMS. But the key thing is that our slope is about 1. The slope is really what I care about, is getting an approximate 1-to-1 in the boundary layer model. And I apologize for this terrible plot scale here, but these are the bulk pressure differences. And you can see, you know, this isn't a storm that's going to have enormous pressure differences, but they're also falling along approximate 1-to-1 line. And I think this is our best comparison of the fidelity of the pressure retrievals, is pressure differences. So this is for Molucca 24. We had a much larger adjustment of the C-130 data to the SAR overpass. This is the derived surface pressure. You see a lot of the drop signs are off-scene, and the eye is off-scene too, of course. But we can still look at 5 or 6 points, and we get another pretty good correlation. So now, Super Typhoon Megi, as we've seen in many talks here, is just a huge, record-breaking type storm. It was a Category 5, so we already know that we're way beyond what we could reasonably expect to do with SAR, but we want to see what we can get. JMA estimated an 885 millibar central pressure, and a max wind about 64. Drop signs were coming up about 86. We all know what happened there. And now this, just pointing out the challenge that we're in. The C-130 overpass, or the C-130 analysis of Megi nearest to the SAR overpass was about an 8 hours off. And if you look at the best track, this is best track minimum pressure versus time, you can see that JMA was doing this very steep deepening of the storm. C-130 drop zones were in pretty good agreement with JMA, but JTWC was predicting at the time of the SAR overpass that the storm was already filling, whereas JMA was saying it was holding steady at about its maximum strength. So you can see we have this big uncertainty here, and it's very difficult to make this analysis. So this is the ASCAP pass, closest in time to the SAR, shifted in time to the time of the SAR overpass. And you can see that the SAR image fills in nicely the gap. So what I had to do here, if I run just the pressure on the low ambiguity winds, we have, you know, remember we have this ambiguity issue on the SAR winds, I can't get anywhere near enough deep pressure. So what I chose was a very small number of high ambiguity winds in the inner core region, and I feed this into the model. And I can get a much deeper storm from that than I could before, but nowhere near the pressure that JMA was analyzing. And then we get this blended wind product with using the directions from the SLP, CMOD 5, and gap filling with the SLP winds. We start to see some interesting structure in the inner port here. And the wind speeds are getting up more reasonable, but still likely a bit too low. And I'm looking at the surface wind divergence again for that. Unfortunately, this one I've reversed the plot scale. So red is now the divergent wind, the blue are the convergent winds. And then this is the microwave rain rate. You can kind of see a correlation here between these sort of divergent regions and the lack of rain there. You have to use some imagination. There was also this visible image that I stole from, all of this I stole from Jeff Hopkins' website here. And you can start to see maybe some patterns in the visible clouds. This is a much smaller time shift between the SAR and the visible imagery. We can start to see some correlation between these patterns here. But still, this is all, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I'm looking at yet, but I find it very interesting. I just wanted to show this from a variety of the other storms that we've looked at. So now the red are convergent regions, the blue are divergent regions again. So if we look at just the observed versus derived pressure gradients, is probably the best thing to look at. And you can see our slope is not very close to 1, but the points are fairly well clustered around the line. And I think this is directly related to wind speed error in the SAR wind retrieval. But remember, we have this very long time shift between the observations. We don't really know exactly what the storm was doing over that time. So if we do a summary of these four Atlantic cases that I've studied in some detail, and we omit Megi, then we're getting about this relationship between the bulk pressure gradients observed and derived. And it looks pretty good. We have a nice slope. But now if we include the Megi, then you know everything goes to heck. So, but Megi is kind of an extreme case. So the progress so far is successfully adapted our methodology of doing sea level pressure retrieval to 1 kilometer SAR winds of tropical cyclones. And this is adapted from a methodology of 25 kilometer quick scat winds in non-tropical cyclone conditions. So this is was a major effort. It was mostly work on the tropical cyclone boundary layer model that we're using in the retrieval methodology. We get about a 3 millibar RMS in the pressure. If we omit MEGI, if we include MEGI 17, it degrades the score. We're improving the wind direction estimates, tending to increase the inflow in the inner core region. And the pressure retrieval errors scale pretty well with wind speed errors. You can really see that in MEGI 17. And so now I'm working on this iterative method to use the pressure measurements and the SAR measurements to really address the high wind GMF. And in the near future, we're going to look at the rest of the ITOP eye images that have the C-130 overcraft. Want to get really looking in and understanding these SFMR versus sonic wind comparisons. It's very, very difficult. Looking at two different C-band model functions that have been developed, the IRAP model function and the new C-Mod5N, this optimization scheme to address the high wind retrievals. And I really want to start looking at the cold wake imagery because I think there's going to be some very interesting physics there. And Chris wanted me to show this. I had taken this slide out of my talk, but this is a comparison of the wind directions using my the SLP wind directions corresponding to the sonic wind directions for MEGI and Malacca. You can see that they're going pretty well along the good agreement line. So that's what I want to say.
Question two.
We don't assume that, but we can identify the geostrophic contribution within the interior wind is whatever it is, and then we can partition out the geostrophic part of that. So any wind in the atmosphere has whatever contributions it has, but one of them is a geostrophic wind contribution.
Another question I had was those divergent patterns that you showed.
Well, I was trying to get some more quantitative information from the other satellite data.
Yeah, that's true. That's a very poor indicator
of surface wind direction. Yeah, it's not using it as, there's nothing about that surface wind direction. It's just looking at, right now it's sort of pretty pictures, but the idea is that this could be a way to indicate areas of maybe more convection in the boundary layer, more updraft. I mean, if this really is the true surface wind convergence divergence, then you have to have convergence into the bottom of the deep convection. And then if you have bands of them, there's going to be divergent flow in between, or maybe you get some cold air down in between. But I think EE was asking about trying to extract some information of surface aspects of convection. And this is right now just at the pretty picture stage, but it's very consistent in all the images. And we just need to, maybe the C-130 radar or something like that will quantify. I've looked at a few different things and I haven't been able to satisfy my mind. But I do think it's an interesting picture. And this is coming out of the SLP filtered winds. So, you know, this is, you can't really look at a gradient field until you've done some processing ahead of time. So, and I don't think you would see this if you did the same exercise with H winds.
Yeah, I looked at divergence and vertical motion fields out of Samurai, which mm-hmm. use the drop stands and the EC fields. And it's qualitative, looks similar, because there are these alternating bands of upward, downward motion.
Yeah.
And sort of low level convergence and divergence.
And we're also, we have a technique for doing flow partitioning into irrotational, non-divergent, and background flow. And we're in the process of adapting that for these SAR winds.
All right, one last. So besides the rain pattern, it will be very interesting to see that above the cold wake.
Oh yeah.
Because we have found from at least, you know, 8 tropical cyclones that there's turbulence is turning of the surface wind towards the center.
Yeah, there has to be.
Of
yeah.
The hurricane as you pass over cold wave.
That's why I really want to start looking at the cold wave imagery.
All right, thank you, Ralph. And are we going back to Chris? Okay.